This is an ABC News special, Hurricane Irma, the aftermath.
Everybody, including myself, wants to get home and see what are we facing.
We're only 10 minutes away from the ocean, so we're kind of nervous what we're going to see when we go back home.
Mine's still standing. Mine's still standing, but there's a lot of water coming in.
I was expecting the worst. Thank God, you know, nothing happened. We're all safe.
The biggest problem so far is the power lines that are down. Our biggest concern is people are going to think that it's safe to come outside.
I can promise you that we will not stop working until the lights are back on for every single customer.
What we're seeing on the West Coast, there's so much damage that we believe we're going to see. We could be talking about a complete rebuild, which in fact could take weeks.
From ABC News headquarters, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
What's left of Irma is drenching places that usually go without tropical weather. Atlanta faced its first tropical storm warning. More than 1,000 flights were canceled at Hartsfield International Airport. Georgia Emergency Management said hundreds of thousands are without power in that state. The storm is now near the Georgia-Alabama state line, finally out of Florida after a 36-hour soaking. ABC's Jim Ryan wrote it out in Miami. Jim, good evening.
Aaron, what a difference a day can make. 24 hours ago, South Florida was locked in the grips of a monster named Irma. Although it was 100 miles away, Irma battered this city with extreme winds and sideways rain. High-rise condo dwellers here in downtown Miami could only sit and wait it out.
Yeah, it was really, really loud and scary. It kept them banging against the windows. And, we tried to stay away from the windows because the building was shaking, I think, because we could hear the doors squeaking and we had water in the bathtub because we had no water, no lights, no nothing, no AC. And then we filled the bathtub with water and you could see the water shaking in the bathtub. So it was pretty scary.
Ina Polopenko was in her apartment on the 32nd floor of a building on Biscayne Bay.
No lights on and anywhere, pretty much. So you could see the wind, actually, because I think it was with the water. It was bringing up the water, so you could see the wind actually going through. And it was like the gusts. We're like in the area where it's between the two buildings where our apartment is. So the gusts coming in through the space, and it was pretty scary.
Today, on foot, on bicycles, and in cars, people are emerging from their hiding places to see what sort of damage is left by Hurricane Irma. They're finding here in Miami that trees were knocked over. The city is largely in the dark. And some of these people were kept from crossing a major bridge to Miami Beach, left sitting in a long line of cars.
It's been about, I want to say like an hour. It's crazy.
The electricity is still out in most of the homes and businesses here and might not be restored for several more days. So this man and his young son decided to walk to the small park across the street from their building and clean up the fallen palm fronds and limbs.
We're facing our fear, you know. Now everything is fine. All the neighbors are coming to help now to clean the park because our kids want to play. That's it. And it's a payback for us, for the city. We love the city and we want to pay back for that.
The storm actually offered an unexpected gift to the people of the city. Countless palm trees grow here. Many had coconuts blown right out of their branches to the sidewalk below. As I walked around downtown Miami, I saw people carrying fresh coconuts, a very literal windfall of the storm. Aaron.
ABC's Jim Ryan in Miami. On the other side of the state and up towards Central Florida, ABC's Alex Stone in Tampa. Alex.
Aaron, it's tough for people here tonight. Yeah, they don't have the damage that we might see in the Keys or in Jacksonville, or people thought they were possibly going to have in this area with a strong storm coming in. But there is no gas pretty much anywhere in this area of the state right now. There is very little to no electricity. Evacuees are in hotels tonight. They'll be using flashlights to look around. In our hotel, there's no power, and evacuees who have gone there out of their homes are just down in the lobby kind of sitting there. There's nothing for them to do, nowhere that they can charge their phone. And the governor says it could be that way for some time, that in some cases it could be weeks before the power comes back on, and it could take some time to get gas stations up and running. People have been roaming around town here looking for gas. There are rumors at gas stations, certain ones are open. You go, it almost looks like they're open. Their signs are lit up. And then they have bags over the nozzles, and there's nowhere to get gas there. So there are some people who are finding some damage, little things here and there. But for the most part, the problem is no grocery stores here, no gas stations, very little electricity. It's making life difficult in this area.
ABC's Alex Stone in Tampa. Some Florida evacuees ended up in the path of the storm. They were trying to escape. Donna Camp left Clearwater with friends and ended up in Greenville, South Carolina. Donna, you went into Irma instead of away from it.
Exactly. I have not hurricane force, but tropical force winds here today and 2 to 4 inches of rain. So we're sitting inside our hotel with the storm outside.
Is this better or worse than you anticipated?
Well, here it's worse than we anticipated, but it's better than being home facing what we were anticipating.
Any sense of what happened where you live in Clearwater?
Yes, I've spoken to my neighbors, and at this point in time, where I live is perfectly fine. I had no damage to my home and no flooding.
So how do you feel about making the decision to evacuate?
I still feel it was perfectly the correct decision to make. When we left the house, we were looking at a Category 4 hurricane, and that just was the thing to do, and I have no regrets doing it.
Donna Camp of Clearwater, Florida, now in Greenville, South Carolina, waiting to make her return with millions of other evacuees. That includes Katie Dillmore of Englewood, Florida. She and her husband also ended up in Greenville, South Carolina. How'd you do, Katie?
Well, we are fine. We're just a little anxious and hoping to go home tomorrow, but I don't know.
How are you going to make the call?
Jeez, I think we're going to have to just check with the local officials and see how roads are, see if there's gas available. The gas availability is really the only thing we're worried about.
Would imagine. Any word on how your property made it through?
Yes, I think we made it through really good. Our neighborhood, somebody said there was an oak tree down on one of the streets, but I had a friend that went over to my house and looked at it and said, we don't have any damage, not even our pool cage, which is just a miracle.
Yeah, remarkable.
Yeah, yep.
I know that.
So we fared well.
You left a son, if I recall correctly, a firefighter who was obviously not allowed to leave because he's a first responder. Any word on how he did?
Yep, he did fine. We actually left my son and son-in-law behind, and they both did well. My son-in-law is actually home now resting, and my son will be able to go home Wednesday, I believe. But they did well. There wasn't even much flooding. So at one point they had brought them boats and issued them life jackets. And that got a little tense because they thought there was going to be such a surge, but the hurricane just dissipated so more quickly than anticipated. And we didn't get the surge they anticipated. So but there wasn't even a whole lot of rescue going on, I don't think.
Any regrets then about the decision to evacuate?
No, nope. No, I still think we did the right thing. Could have been much different.
It sure could have. You ended up in the path of the storm as opposed to away from it, as it turned out.
Yes, I guess we did. I haven't really been watching it because I'm kind of burned out on watching it. But we are in a high wind warning here in Greensville, and it is windy and rainy and cold, but nothing like I think we would have experienced if we had stayed home.
We're glad everything's okay there. How'd you pass the time?
Oh, well, the hotel had a complimentary happy hour last night from 5:30 to 7:30. So we did that.
The happy hour always makes it easier.
It does.
any word on your neighbors? Everybody okay?
Yep, they're all okay. I've talked to all of my neighbors. Some of them left, but the ones that stayed are all okay.
How about power?
We still don't have power. There are parts of town that do have power, but we still do not have power.
And will that influence your decision when to leave the hotel in South Carolina to return?
No, it won't, because if it was just my husband and I, it might. But we have our daughter with us, and she is in the health field, and she actually probably shouldn't have even come with us, but she did. So we've got to get her back to work as soon as we possibly can.
Good luck on the road. Hope you find gas and an easy go as you make your way back. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Katie Dillmore, who evacuated Englewood, Florida with her husband, Jim. She's in South Carolina. And whatever they're coming home to, it undoubtedly will be less severe than what the folks in the Florida Keys are facing. There was a line of people trying to get back, but the Keys were off limits today. We'll go there next when this ABC News special continues.
This is an ABC News special. Hurricane Irma, the aftermath. From ABC News headquarters, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
What's left of Irma is now moving north. Jacksonville, Florida, in the line of fire. The new storm surge, heavy rain and winds pound Georgia. There's been a flash flood emergency in the Carolinas. Tornado watches, too, as this storm continues to take its toll. But it is out of Florida after leaving much of the state without electricity. It could take weeks to restore the power. ABC News anchor David Muir, the anchor of World News Tonight, was making his way to the Florida Keys after riding out the storm in hard-hit Naples. David, what are you finding?
Well, I can tell you there's some flooding on the roadways as we've been making this journey to the Keys. You know, the mystery that still exists after this storm is the scope of the devastation in the Keys. It's been very hard to get in there. We do have teams in there today. There are stories coming out of just devastation there, and we knew that that was the first place that Irma made Florida landfall. The second that you mentioned is Marco Island, and we were not far from there in Naples, and in fact, there was a wind gust reported of 135 miles per hour, so we knew it was going to be bad, and when it came over, when the hurricane came right over Naples, it was an extraordinary thing to witness, and I think for anyone who stayed behind, it must have been a very unsettling time when the hurricane came through. There were wind gusts at the Naples airport of 142 miles per hour. And this morning at daybreak, we could see the damage. You know, there were roof lines and apartment buildings nearby that had come down on the cars there. But I'll tell you, Aaron, one of the good signs was the fact that there weren't many people outside inspecting the damage, even when the sun came up this morning, which is a sign that people did heed the warnings. You know, with this hurricane, that track shifted westward with only 24 hours notice over the weekend before it actually hit. So it left people on the western side of the state scrambling to find shelter and to decide whether they had enough time to actually get to a safer place. But the incredible thing about the scope of this hurricane, though, was the width, the size. It was wider than the state of Florida. That's why you saw storm surge in Miami. You saw parts of Brickell, the business district, underwater. You saw streets in Miami Beach underwater. And yet you had storm surge concerns on the west side as well. And that's where the heavy wind damage was. So Irma came through and certainly left its mark.
No question it left its mark, even though in some communities they are, you know, breathing that familiar sigh of relief that it wasn't worse. As you've been encountering some of the damage and some of the people, is there relief? Is there jubilation? Or are people still nervous, you know, about what they might find?
Yeah, I do think there's some relief. I also believe that there are a lot of people still in the shelters and still either calling friends or neighbors to say, can you check on my property? Because a lot of these neighborhoods are still quite empty. So, you know, as we drive through the Everglades here, I mean, there are trees snapped all the way through here. There were trees all down in Naples. You know, power lines certainly down. It's an extraordinary effort underway now with the utility company here in Florida. You know, nearly 6 million customers are without power. It's one of their, or if not the worst, power situation ever as far as outages are concerned. So I do think there's relief, particularly when it comes to storm surge. You know, they had forecasted in Naples a storm surge possibly of, you know, 10 to 15 feet. Instead, they saw a surge that was much lower than that. And that part certainly was a relief. And I think one of the sort of scientific calculations was the fact that the hurricane was coming up the West Coast, fueled by the warm and relatively shallow waters of the Gulf. But when it made that turn over Marco Island and into Naples, as terrifying as it might have been for the people who were in Naples, and we were there and experienced it, it was with tremendous force. It also means that when the hurricane makes that turn, it begins to shear some of the strength, you know, slow those winds down because it's over land. And you've seen that now quickly knock this thing down as Irma continues on her path, but certainly no longer a hurricane tonight.
All right, David, good journey. ABC News anchor David Muir making his way to the Florida Keys, hard hit by Hurricane Irma. It first came ashore in the United States near Key West as a Category 4 storm. Lee Sherrill lives further up the Keys in Key Largo and tried to get back home last night and again today, but he was stopped at a checkpoint on U.S. 1 in Florida City and told no go. He's with us now. How are you holding up, Lee?
Oh, hot and frustrated.
I can imagine.
I found a friend's place, crashed there, and got up this morning, helped him peel off his roof and did a bunch of work to his roof. And then I went over to another friend's house that had some trees down, helped him chainsaw some trees up. And now I'm sitting in the road baking like a fried egg, waiting to get home so I can go clean up my own mess.
What are they telling you?
Sit and wait. Be patient. It's very understandable. They don't want any more people down there that they have to be responsible for. That's the situation. They really don't need us down there, because if we get injured, then they have to respond to us. And that's a very understandable situation. They have a crisis that they're having to deal with. We just want to go down there and help. I've got water. I've got a generator. I've got a pressure cleaner. I've got ladders. I've got chainsaws. I've got 30 gallons of fuel. I'm wanting to get down there and help.
You want to get to work. It's got to be frustrating that they're not letting you go.
It's understandable, but it's also very frustrating.
Any word on how your property is doing?
My house is still home, but the bottom was under 4 feet of water. A gentleman that lives next to me, he was on, he did a lot of live feeds, and the fence around his property is 4 feet tall, and the water was all the way to the top. Got a lot of other people that talked to me and said that there's a lot of areas that were washed out, but the base side seems to have weathered pretty well. I got family down at Kiewis. I'm hoping they're all right.
You got to be anxious to get in touch with them.
Yeah, it's just pretty overwhelming. Property's property. We can, you know, we can rebuild. You know, that's all I have. I don't have anywhere to go. This is it. So I just want to go down there and help my family, friends, neighbors.
Any regrets about the decision to evacuate, given what happened in the Keys? It sounds like you made the right call, even though it may be a while before you get back in.
I went through Andrew. I went through a Cat 5 store. I know what it's like. And it's a bulldozer. And to stay, you would have to have one hell of a house to stay in. Because you're gambling, and you're gambling with your life. Because if it hits you dead on, if you're not in a bulletproof home, it's going to take you out.
Lee Sherrill, stuck in Florida City, trying to get back home to Key Largo. So is Dale Machezik. He's on the line with us now.
Can't get there. They won't let us on the stretch just yet.
Frustrated, or are you a patient man?
I'm learning to be more patient. I'm a little frustrated, but I'm also a spiritual person, so I'm very grateful that if there was any lives lost, it was few. And everybody that I know here in the upper half and in the mainland area is safe and secure. So luckily we didn't get a Cat 5 like they predicted. That's a good thing.
Any word on your property?
No, I have a neighbor who stayed through the storm, who sent us a couple things until he lost power. And another neighbor via Facebook said that we probably had about a 3-foot surge. They went across our docks, so it's questionable whether our boats survived.
What are they telling you?
The stretch itself is impassable still in places, and there's still power lines down, so it's not safe. He said, luckily, as the water has been receding, the impassable is primarily on the northbound side, but there are power lines down that make it not safe. So that's I just got that from the guy right here at the roadblock at the top of the stretch.
You're in good company there with folks trying to get back down into the Keys.
Yeah, I reckon. I'm going to go back to my office and see what I can do to help out in Homestead in the meantime. But I was going to try and get down. But maybe later, maybe tomorrow. Not sure. Just gave it a good shot, but they're not letting us through.
Well, good luck. Wish you well, and hope everything's okay with your house.
Well, thank you, sir. And more important, it looks like most people are fine. So that's what really matters. We can always fix our houses, right?
True enough. Dale Machezik there in Florida City stopped while trying to get back to Key Largo. The Monroe County Sheriff's Department is saying there's no chance anybody's getting to the Keys tonight, so they're telling people to head to shelters in Miami-Dade County, and there's no time frame when residents will be allowed back. We'll survey other parts of Florida when this ABC News special continues.
This is an ABC News special. Hurricane Irma, the aftermath, From ABC News headquarters, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Hurricane Irma wreaked havoc on Florida, a 36-hour assault, and what's left of the storm is still not over as it impacts Georgia and South Carolina. In Florida tonight, FEMA teams have visited already nearly 15,000 homes to assess needs, with many thousands more homes to come. After its initial U.S. landfall in the Keys, Irma took aim at Marco Island for a second landfall on the Florida Gulf Coast. ABC's Matt Gutman is there. Matt, you wrote it out in nearby Naples, where Irma was just ferocious.
It's hard to describe the intensity of what 120, 130 mile per hour wind gusts feel like, Aaron, but I kind of say that it's like a windborne mallet just whacking you in the head. And the torrential rain came down with such intensity that it felt like a fire hose. You almost couldn't wipe the water away from your face fast enough. But if there is a silver lining to any sort of catastrophic and deadly storm like this, it is that it moves quickly at about 14 miles per hour. And so once we had really passed that horrific eye wall, and then we were in the eye itself, there was that eerie period of calm. Our ears popped because the pressure dropped. And then the southern side of the storm really basically became disorganized and didn't materialize. And that's really what spared large sections of the western part of Florida from that dreaded storm surge. In Naples, where we were, it was forecast to be 10 to 15 feet. Here in Marco Island, where I am right now, is forecast to be 10 feet, but they got much less than that. So there's significant damage in terms of trees, about 15 homes lost roofs, minor damage to homes, but only very, very few injuries. And we've been following the fire department around, and they're just responding to calls that they haven't gotten around to yet because they were hunkered down as well. But by and large, it seems that there are critically few injuries here on the western side of Florida. And in one indication of that is that the Coast Guard said they have not received a single request for a search and rescue operation so far today.
And that's certainly good news, even if it is surprising, given the ferocity that you describe. And Marco Island is where the storm made its second landfall in Florida with 130-mile-per-hour winds. So it's almost shocking that the community held up as well as it did.
It's shocking. It also is a testament to building codes, modern building codes in Florida. You know, obviously, Florida has suffered a significant number of hurricanes in its history, most notoriously in 2005 when a number of category 2, 3, 4, and even a 5, which was Katrina when it passed over here, went through. And the codes were made much more strict, and folks had to abide by them, and by and large, builders have. And the buildings with tempered glass sustained tremendous amount of wind and even debris flying at them, as did the superstructures of these buildings. We see lots of shingles and aluminum belt bent around trees and poles and lots of downed trees. But other than that, really the structures of most of these places have withstood the brunt of what many people thought would be this cataclysmic Category 3.
Sounds like just a big mess as opposed to, as you say, something catastrophic.
That's perfectly put, Aaron. It really is just a giant mess, mostly just tree limbs down. Navigating these roads is like going through a slalom course sometimes. But more than that, it doesn't seem that there's a tremendous amount of damage. The biggest story is going to be power and water. Both are out to a significant proportion of the population here in Florida, power out to well over 5 million homes. Nowhere that I've seen in South Florida has running water just yet. Hopefully officials say they can get that back on as quickly as possible. It will take time to recover and rebuild, specifically the power and electricity infrastructure. But again, the most important part is that there was no loss of life, at least in this part of Florida, and a great deal of relief because of that.
Incredible relief. Okay, Matt, thanks. ABC's Matt Gutman in Marco Island. ABC News Chief Meteorologist Ginger Zee is here now. This is big, and it's still going.
It's still going.
36 hours in Florida, and now more beyond.
Yeah, so I just saw images coming out of Charleston, and I think you get lulled. When you're talking about a storm for 11 days, you start to say, oh my gosh, it's almost like people want it to be over, and so they just claim it over, but it's not over. And so that's what I believe has happened with Irma. But there are still major effects. You saw Jacksonville throughout the morning hours of Monday, and then going into early Tuesday, we're still going to be dealing with it through a lot of Georgia, South Carolina, all the way up into Tennessee eventually.
this all started back in the Caribbean, and it's mm-hmm. incredible the duration of how many days we've been talking about this. But this one was powerful.
Very powerful. The longest, strongest being 180-mile-per-hour winds for the longest amount of time around the globe. So that beats typhoons, and that's what that thing looked like. It looked like a typhoon going to the Philippines. It looked like one of those buzzsaws, and then it started to expand and expand and expand, and that high just kept pushing it westward. And it was so – the track looks like a very straight snake. I mean, it really didn't take a lot of turns until the very end there, until it interacted with Cuba and went north. And so that's – it's the cone. And the problem, I think, what happened with this storm, too, is the longevity of everyone speaking about it. You know, even 10 years ago, we didn't have the technology to share with each other what we do now. We didn't have the ability for everybody to look at the technology that we have, and so everyone wasn't doing their own forecasting as well, and they weren't following every 2 mile movement of a track. And I think what happened with this one too is everyone had their eyes on it, which is wonderful, but at the same time they don't pay attention as much to the cone. And I think the cone, this is a good lesson to take from Irma, the cone is important. Everybody in the cone has the threat of that line coming through them at some point.
Were you surprised after the second landfall mm-hmm. when the back half of the storm just seemed to start to break up a little bit?
I wasn't as surprised because there's so much land to interact with. You know, the hurricanes hate land. I mean, that's their big enemy. That's their kryptonite is friction. And so I wasn't surprised, but I was the pace at which it weakened was very strong, and that was happening quickly. So with that a little bit, but yeah, as soon as and it really started to move. When I saw that go up to 14 miles per hour moving north, I thought it's over. This is gonna end quickly.
The forward speed was the
forward speed, and this morning it was 18. I mean, it's cooking. You know, it's so different than a Harvey.
And Harvey, right?
Where you have absolutely nothing to steer. We knew that for days that it wasn't going to go anywhere, and then it didn't. And funny to see a track do a little loop de loop like Harvey did. This one, you knew it was going to move. There were two forcing factors: that low that's still trying to pick it up, and the high out there, and they act like gears. One of them clockwise, one of them counterclockwise. Those gears come together, and it was just how quickly do the gears grab it and push it out.
One of the most stunning images, I think, that I saw throughout the course of this was how empty Tampa Bay, Naples mm-hmm. Bay, the water was sucked out.
My aunt is in Isla Mirada, and she left, but she has a place there, and her neighbor stayed, and he was taking pictures and sending them to me. So early, we had these images from the Keys where the water's gone, mm-hmm. and her little channel where the manatees live and where was sand. And that is odd. I mean, the places where beaches aren't beaches, to see those images, because really the strength and width, and that speaks so much to that intensity and width don't always come together mm-hmm. in a hurricane. Andrew was compact and intense, and that's why we had Homestead. And you always hear Homestead, but you don't hear that it attacked Jacksonville too, because it didn't, because it was so compact. With this storm, we had intensity and breadth, and that made a difference in Irma.
Did we learn anything from this storm?
Oh, my gosh. I learn every storm. I feel like every storm we end up getting. To know that two Category 4s can make landfall in the United States, because we've never done that before, just knowing and realizing that because it hasn't happened in the past doesn't mean it can't happen now. I think that's a great thing to remember. The second thing I've learned, you know, with Harvey and with Matthew before that, I felt like in the meteorological community, we've talked a lot about impacts. How do we make sure people understand the impacts, not just the path? And so, you know, often outside of that path, you'll have heavy rains and you'll get those inland flooding concerns, and then people die in the mm-hmm. inland flooding. Right. Matthew was the perfect example, where North Carolina happened and everyone's going, well, I didn't know that was going to happen. We had been talking about it, but it doesn't get the attention. People want to know about the wind speeds. They want to know how fast it's coming, where it's going, and then they forget that there's all the other things that come along with it, the tornadoes included.
Sure.
So I feel like people are beginning, and Harvey was a great one where we were kept saying from Thursday on, 35, 40 inches, and people were listening, I believe. And then it came true, unfortunately, and we had that interior. I think that one could have been a lot worse had people not been in their homes, not driving on the roads, which was great. This one I really learned for myself to keep emphasizing the cone over and over and over again, and just remind people that that line 5 days out doesn't mean as much as the cone.
Ginger Z, chief meteorologist here at ABC News. More when this ABC News special continues.
This is an ABC News special, Hurricane Irma, The Aftermath. From ABC News headquarters, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Irma has been especially damaging to the power supply. Millions in Florida and Georgia lost electricity, the most ever from a single storm. And tonight, crews are rushing to get the lights back on, but officials are also warning for some it could take weeks, if not months. ABC's chief business and economics correspondent Rebecca Jarvis is here. Before the storm, Rebecca, the projection was this could cost $200 billion. That estimate hold?
Well, Moody's has put out an estimate today that says that it will be slightly less than what was expected, but still a huge number. When you look at the damage done by both Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma together, they believe that there will be between $150 billion and $200 billion in damage. And to compare that to Katrina, the most costly storm in history, which came in at $160 billion in damage, what you have now are two back-to-back storms that look like they will be in that same ballpark as far as the expensiveness of the storm goes. Now, that said, the storm's track, while it followed up the west coast of Florida, the damage in Tampa was far less, or appears to be less than what was expected. That's not to say that Tampa did not get a huge amount of damage. There were huge damages and flooding and issues all over Florida, but the level and the degree to which the damages appear to be today, it appears to be less. That said, Aaron, as you know, these storms take months, even years of cleanup work. And for the families who are still probably waiting in many cases to go back and return to homes that have been evacuated, there's still a lot of rebuilding ahead.
And so many of those families are anxious before the elements set in to try and salvage what they can. But I think the storm was a real wake-up call, Rebecca, about how much property, just the sheer amount of property, is vulnerable to a hurricane hitting Florida.
Absolutely. And the density of the populations, 8.5 million properties, is what CoreLogic put out as their estimate of the number of properties that were potentially in the way, in the track of Hurricane Irma. And there's just a huge density of properties all up and down both coasts of Florida, as well as manufactured homes that are in Florida. And the realization today for many homeowners who will be looking at those homeowners insurance policies and looking to the fine print, that's going to be a big thing going forward. As we saw with Hurricane Harvey, between 70 and 80% of Houston homeowners didn't have flood insurance who were hit by flooding as a result of the hurricane. Homeowners insurance does not cover flooding and wind damage from hurricanes. So oftentimes, homeowners in areas where there are large bodies of water, they purchase homeowners insurance, but then it comes down to the fine print. And what does that fine print specifically say? I've dealt with this before, Aaron, in the aftermath of hurricanes, where you go, you sit down with the family at the kitchen table, and you look at that policy, and all of a sudden there are stipulations that all of a sudden the boxes don't check. And I can imagine there's going to be some big arguments and a lot of back and forth ahead with a lot of the families who have been hit and their insurance providers.
Our chief business and economics correspondent, Rebecca Jarvis. We're back to the storm zone when this ABC News special continues.
This is an ABC News special, Hurricane Irma, The Aftermath. From ABC News headquarters, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Underway tonight in Florida, the largest ever mobilization of power line workers in this country. And on the roads, millions of Floridians who were ordered to evacuate started going back home, many in need of gas. ABC's Alex Stone is in Tampa. Alex?
Well, I can tell you on a personal note, I need gas. So I feel what so many people here are feeling right now. We've got less than a quarter of a tank, and we keep getting notices that certain places are open, and you go and use more gas to find out, no, they're not open. At some point, they will be open. It's just, when is that going to happen? And we need gas now, just like everybody else needs. And then we get reports that a place 32 miles away has gas. It doesn't do you much good. Electricity, everything, charging your cell phone, charging your devices, that's impossible right now unless you have external charging devices or you find somebody who does have enough gas that you can charge something off of their car. But it makes it very difficult, especially if this goes on for a long time for the people who live here.
Yeah, Alex, Tampa avoided the worst of the storm itself, but with power and gasoline in such short supply, this is no easy go.
Well, looking ahead tonight, it's going to be a long night for the people who live here with no power, with very little gas, with really no services other than, yes, police and fire will respond. But other than that, nothing is open. And they wonder how long is that going to last. They've heard the warnings that this could go on for weeks. There are hopes from people here that it will only be tonight, or the power will come back on tonight, or gas stations will start opening. But that makes it tough in this area. It wasn't so much damage, but now getting their lives going again is difficult when you don't have gas, power, all kinds of services that you typically need.
ABC's Alex Stone in Tampa. And once more now to Southeast Florida, ABC's Jim Ryan in Miami. Jim?
Aaron, it's easy to assign a personality to a hurricane. After all, we give them names. If you look back a couple of weeks, Harvey seemed impatient. It couldn't wait to crash into the Texas shoreline and then downgrade itself to a tropical storm. That's when it became its most dangerous, raining itself out over Houston, killing at least 60 people and doing countless billions of dollars in damage. Irma seemed to be much more methodical. Born just off the west coast of Africa, she made her way across the ocean into the Caribbean, did untold destruction to several island communities there before skirting along the northern edge of Cuba and then coming up the west coast of Florida. She initially had offered hints that she would be coming here into Miami, and even from 100 miles away, the winds were up to 100 miles per hour here in this city. Instead, Irma went through the Florida Keys before the storm went up the west coast and then pulled the water right out of Tampa Bay before coming ashore there as well. There's a cliche about dodging bullets. I don't really like that cliche very much, but it's one that's being used here today. This community was largely emptied out before the storm arrived, and it's probably a good thing. Even an indirect punch from a pugilist as powerful as Irma can sting. Today, people were returning to Miami, some of them coming down out of their condominiums to take a look around. And as I stood on a balcony looking down into Biscayne Bay, I saw something in the water. Two or three dolphins swimming along and surfacing occasionally. They, too, seemed to want to get a look at what Irma had left behind. Aaron?
ABC's Jim Ryan. Irma left behind a mess. Days of cleanup ahead without light or air conditioning. We wish Florida well. I'm Aaron Katursky. You've been listening to a special presentation from ABC News.